Ihr hört immer noch die Wüste Welle, das Lokalmagazin live am Montagvormittag. Das war schon der erste Song von Joe Wickers von seinem neuen Album Notes for the Wood Burning Stove. Und Joe Wickers ist jetzt hier bei uns im Studio. Aus Kanada kommt er, Part-Time, Farmer, Part-Time Musiker. Hello, Joe.
Hey, howdy.
How is it going?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. This is my first radio interview in Germany.
Great that we could make it happen. Thanks for having you here. And how did you enjoy the show last night? On Sunday night, this is kind of a special day.
Yeah, you know, Sunday nights are always Sundays and Mondays, and even Tuesdays are hard evenings on tour, just because the dates. But I was really happy with the number of people that were there. I was actually surprised. Because I had to leave after sound check to go find good parking for the vehicle. And then when I came back, the room had filled up, and good atmosphere, great listeners. Everybody was really listening and paying attention. So you can't ask for anything more when you're a solo acoustic performer.
Actually, you had two gigs yesterday.
I did, yeah. I was supposed to be in the UK for these dates during the tour, but it didn't make sense. So I started booking some shows myself, and I ended up doing a doubleheader Sunday fun day. I played in Freiburg in the afternoon, a living room concert, a lot of college kids that were there, and was trying to get away as quickly as possible. But it's tricky because when you're a solo performer, I feel like, well, whenever you're performing, you are being vulnerable on stage and at least showing parts of who you are and introducing yourself to the public. And there always has to be time to meet people afterwards, because they take time to get to know you. It's your responsibility to do the same for the listener. So I wasn't able to get away from Freiburg as quickly as I wanted to. Luckily, I was able to pick up some speed on the Autobahn as I came here, and I'm pretty sure I got a speeding ticket when I got into town.
So you didn't have much time to see Tübingen, to see the town?
Not really, but I was actually quite amazed when I came around the corner and came into the old village. This is my third time in Europe, and the first time I was just wowed by everything, because the history and even the architecture is so much older than anything in North America. So I don't want to say that that has been lost on me coming here the third time, but I was definitely wowed when I made the corner. Like, this is an old city. This is beautiful. And I want to come back so I can spend more time. Even as I was walking here to pick up the vehicle and then drive, I was like, I got to maybe return downtown before I leave today just to get a better feel for the town. But I like it. I grew up in a smaller town, so big cities sometimes intimidate me. But this, I think, is the right pace for me.
So you're halfway through to the Europe tour. What else have you seen so far?
You know what? The first week was mostly in northern Germany. And I've seen a lot of friends that I made the last two times. I got to say, I haven't really been able to get out and explore as much as I'd like to. But I've been able to stay with friends that I made on the last tour and really pick up our friendship. And that's been a priority on this trip.
So you mentioned the vulnerability, and what are you? You got a recipe against that, or you feel that every day you go on stage?
I think with time you develop more confidence when you're on stage and you forget about it. But I think when you, or at least for myself, when I'm working on a song and I perform it for the first time, I can be scared, because it's like, well, okay, this can be revealing. But I think that's important, or at least it's important for me, because I find growth in doing that. And I think we don't allow ourselves as humans to be vulnerable enough, like even men. And I think it's important to show emotion with whatever it is that we're going through in life. And it's something that I've been trying to make a priority in my life.
And the audience won't abuse it. Or?
No, I think if people are there for the music, they're willing to listen. And so far, there hasn't been any problems. There has been a few occasions in the past where I've had songs that are more political or have social commentaries involved, and only a few times I've had people walk out. And I wish that we would have been able to have, you know, a good dialogue. The one was a song about the environmental degradation of northern Alberta with the tar sands, and there was a bunch of oil workers that were there, and they took it personally. And it wasn't a song that criticizes the workers; it's the industry altogether. Because I think in Alberta, being a primarily oil and gas driven economy, it's also important to take care of the environment. So I guess it's only really like the more political songs where people might have a backlash, but I think that's also good too.
That kind of commentary won't happen. The result, the leaving people won't happen in Europe. So
no, yeah.
But did you notice any differences between the in general or in special occasions between the Canadian and European audience?
Yeah. I feel like there is more of an interest in Europe for people to, like audience members, to take a risk and come listen to somebody they may have never heard before. And I don't know if it's sort of like this willingness to check out an artist because I've come from far away. But I feel like arts are held at a higher value in Europe than in Canada. So that's one noticeable change. And quieter crowds. In Canada and the U.S., if you're playing bars, there'll be people that are just there to drink and party and don't care about the musician on stage. Whereas in Europe, there seems to be a little bit more respect.
Could have happened on a Thursday night.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, you have to be okay with that too, because not everybody's going to be there for the music. And when you have an acoustic guitar, you're not going to win everybody over. But you know, you take every moment as they come.
Sometimes you try to win the party people.
Oh, always. Yeah. Sometimes you got to jump up on their table and get them clapping along, but. You don't want to be disrespectful either.
You're not only storyteller with your songs, but also you have the stories in between the songs. Mm-hmm. Do you think about that before? Is it always the same story, or how?
Sometimes they are, but sometimes it's spontaneous or different angles to the song. And I think I'm still figuring out the right way to introduce songs. Coming back to your earlier question about the difference between European and North American cultures is like subtle. There's little subtleties in language. Obviously, it being English second language for a lot of people here, sometimes I have to be. I have to change a word or two to for the listener, and that's something that I've realized in order to, for it to be more easily understood. So it will change from night to night, but you know, I have a couple silly jokes that I like to tell in between, and that's mostly just for myself because I get a kick out of it.
Could you give us an example?
So on the last tour, I didn't say this one last night. I normally say it all the time. I did a tour across Canada in December, and I went with my, I was with my dog and my wife, and we went from Vancouver to Halifax, an entire, like, I think 6 months, played shows the entire time, and our dog was a puppy at the time. So we were doing a lot of training in the morning, going to dog parks. And with it being a music tour, we taught the dog how to play the bass. So she's a subwoofer. That's so silly. But I, you know, I thought it up. It's probably been thought up by other people, but, you know, I'm taking credit for it for now.
I really like the Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that one until I came back to Europe. And the other day, I had to do laundry. And I was thinking about when I got paid in socks. And that was actually a pretty cool deal because socks are valuable on the road.
And it was in advance. They paid you in, but how many socks you...
Three pairs. Oh, three pairs of socks.
Which was the whole payment.
Yep, that was the payment and some beer.
And it was the sponsorship of the sock company.
Yeah, right? American Socks. So, yeah, I got paid in socks. And then I felt like I was living the dream. Socks, drugs, and rock and roll.
But you could also say that sucks.
No? Oh, that sucks. Yeah, yeah. But I was okay with it because I wasn't supposed to play Grows Rock. And I... you know, was able to sneak on because they had a late cancellation. So just being able to be a part of the experience and get a little bit of exposure was cool enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't need anything.
Never heard about that sock company as a sponsor of they put all the socks there over there as a decoration?
Yeah, they have like a booth up front, and they're a company out of Spain, which is deceiving because with a name like American Socks...
From Spain.
Yeah, from Spain. Who knows?
I think it's time for the first live song. Which one you will choose? And you have a story about?
Yeah, song? I'm going to play Notes for the Wood-Burning Stove. It's the first track off the record. And like you said in the introduction, I'm a farmer half-time of the year. During the spring and summer, I work on my family's farm. I've been renting land from neighbors, my dad, for the last 12 years. And in the winter times, I've been either going to school or working on making records, writing songs, using the winters as an opportunity to create. And I live in the old farmhouse on our property, and there is a big coal wood-burning stove in the kitchen, and I found myself a lot of times trying to write songs that I didn't like and was just burning them in the wood stove. And this is where the inspiration for the song came from.
Of all the notes I wrote for the wood-burning stove.
Joe Wickers vom aktuellen Album Notes for the Wood-Burning Stove, der Titelsong. This one you saved from the stove.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, more of an expression like, it's actually one line that I'd written like in stream of consciousness sort of writing exercise, and was getting rid of a lot of stuff. And then I thought, oh, you know what, there's something in this. So I kind of set it aside for a while. And so the idea was there for a while, but it just took a few years before I came back to it and was able to piece some words to it.
But that's that image that stands for your creative process, that sometimes you have to get rid of stuff and burn it literally or actually?
Absolutely. Or a way of at least moving forward. I recognized I had this personally I had this pattern where I would dwell on stuff that I did in the past, like past mistakes, and would hold on to it, and it wasn't healthy for my mental well-being, and it just becomes clutter. So, you know, sometimes taking the clutter, even if it's stuff in your home, and getting rid of it or burning it is very cathartic, and also allows for renewal. That's kind of like my personal stance to that song. But I've played it for I've been playing it for the last short while here, and my relationship with the song is ever changing, especially when I know the person's story that I'm playing it to.
And the cover, is it the stove or is it not?
There it is right there. That's in the kitchen of my farmhouse. And I have Juniper, the subwoofer, with me on the cover.
The dog, the farm dog.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you're the part-time musician, part-time farmer, when it's season or farm season, do you have time for creativity? And
yeah, I actually find that's when I do also get a lot of work done, because I'm in the country, I'm isolated, I put in a full day and I operate a lot of machinery, and I'm alone in that time, and it can get a little boring being 10 hours in a tractor, but it's a space that's comfortable, and in that boredom is where in my head I will work on ideas for songs.
What's your special duty? What kind of grains you are farming?
It's wheat and barley and canola. It's
like wheat.
I have to, you know what, some people get excited because they hear that, and I have to say no, it's a hard T at the end. Wheat. Okay. Although there's pots getting legalized in Canada and some good growing opportunities, so that title might change soon.
Wheat and what else was it?
Barley, like malt barley for beer. Mm-hmm. A lot of barley from our area gets sent down to the Northwest, where there's a lot of microbreweries, or for feed, and then canola, which is used for oil and ethanol.
And you have lots of big land, big farm, like imagine the Canadian wilderness.
Well, and this is the strange thing, because to me, we're a small farm, and even in our community, we're on the small end of the spectrum, but we're big by European standards, big by areas in West Coast, East Coast, U.S. as well.
And how is the life for farming in Canada? Lots of farmers in Europe, in Germany, they will have to give up.
Yeah, it's okay for us, like, so far. The technology has made it easier to do, and we're also with new technology, we're not summer fallowing anymore, so we can use continuous seeding, so we're reusing all the land every year. But that comes with its own struggles, because things are becoming more corporate, and but you are seeing a lot of smaller farms getting bought up by bigger farms, so it's becoming an occupation of fewer and fewer, and I'm just so sentimental, even coming back to the inability to let go of stuff. I have a hard time thinking of a different job, because I do like going back and working with the land, and music provides an opportunity for me to be very social. But on the counter, like on the flip side of that, when I'm out in the country and alone, it is very conducive for writing. And I like being able to have the balance of the two, because traveling and touring nonstop can be very exhausting. So it's good to have something else to allow you to be refresh the mind and the body. And then when I'm out on the farm and get lonely for too long, I'm ready to hit the road again. So it works in a cycle, and it works for me.
Loneliness and social, over socialized, yeah.
Yeah.
What about the social life in the farm? You live with your parents and your wife.
Yeah.
And
so
your dog.
We have a yard, and I'm in the original house, and then my parents, who used to live in that, and my uncle before them, and grandparents before them, they built a house in the late 80s across the way, in the house that I grew up in. But after moving away to go to college, it it's hard to move it back into the basement. Luckily, there's that option of the old house, and that's where I, like, my punk band used to rehearse. So I started playing music in that house when I was young, so I'm very familiar with it, and it's comfortable. But it's not going to be forever, because in the next couple years, we're going to be moving likely into my grandpa's place in town, in Drumheller, the nearest town, which is 10 kilometers away. And it's a 100-plus heritage home, and we're working on it as well. We're fixing it up, so I'll be kind of living in town as well, so that'll be a first.
But not giving up the land.
Yeah, correct.
How did you get in touch with the punk and alternative scene if it's so isolated?
You know, that's a great question. I think just pop culture, really. Like, when Nirvana hit the scene, that was the band that made me want to learn the guitar. I wanted to play grunge music. And then after being exposed to grunge, punk rock was, you know, grunge's like, you know, sibling. And I don't know what it was. I think, like, the teen angst, the fast music, the accessibility, and even learning guitar. Like, the internet was new, but I could get chords online. So I learned as many Ramones and Clash songs as I possibly could. And they were all three chord punk. So it was easy. And I couldn't really sing back then, but you can scream. And it was an excellent outlet, especially in a town where there's not a lot to do. It felt like we were doing something. And you start learning covers, then eventually you realize, okay, I think I can string a couple words together to these chords. And then my first band made an EP, and then we started booking shows around the province. And it felt like we were doing something positive. And we were also inspired by the political messages of these bands we were getting into, because it was so helpful for our perspective. Living in a small town where things are very narrow, this was eye-opening. And it's like, there is a world beyond this small town. And I'm so happy that I found alternative music for that reason alone, because it changed my worldview.
And then you changed your style again?
Absolutely, yeah.
from the alternative punk sound to the folk movement, the singer-songwriter stuff? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, my punk band, I started up in Edmonton when I moved there for university. It was always behind an acoustic guitar, so this is home base for me. It was a folk punk band. Well, it still is, but it always had elements of singer-songwriter to it, but just in a more punk aesthetic. And I think just the music has evolved. I'm still writing songs behind the acoustic guitar, but as I change as a person, I want to play songs that are you know, reflective of where I am as a person, and write songs that reflect where I am in life. And I think styles are going to evolve. I don't want to be putting out the same folk punk record that I did 11 years ago, because it just becomes redundant. And then I think a person can lose their interest. So it's important for growth to push and challenge yourself to write different kinds of music and different styles.
So it's more about content than about shape.
Exactly. And I feel lucky when I can step into a room and not really know the audience, but be able to have a catalog of many different styles of songs, and be able to pick the songs, you know, according to what feels right in the atmosphere of the room.
What feels right for now? What would you pick?
You know what? I'm gonna do one that I haven't really been playing a lot on this tour. It's called 10-Year Reunion. And growing up in this small town, I am isolated on the farm, but I make trips into town, and you bump into the ghosts of your past, so to speak. So I missed my 10-year high school reunion, but it's a reunion every time that I go into town. Just going to take a quick sip of water here.
Of course.
Yeah, there's a flu that's been bouncing around and staying up late and hanging out in rooms with lots of people. I think makes you susceptible to the winter cold, and it might be coming my way.
The last time I seen him, he was at the Legion Hall, his arm in a sling, his fist no match for the brick wall.
Joe Wickers live hier im Studio im Lokalmagazin auf der 96.6. Kanadischer Singer-Songwriter mit neuem Album. Gerade auf Tour, Notes for the Wood Burning Stove. Stove ist erschienen bei Gunner Records. How did it happen that your album is released on a German label? Only on a German label.
Yeah.
You don't have a Canadian label, no?
No. So I was on tour with Mobina Galore. Rock band from punk rock band from Winnipeg, and I've known those ladies for the better part of like 8 years because of my band playing shows with them and touring, and they put out a record last spring and wanted to bring an acoustic opener along for the ride, and I was lucky enough to be that person. And we did 6 weeks around Europe, and their album was released, their last two, on Gunner. And I met him and ended up seeing him a lot on that tour, and we hit it off. And when I had the songs all finished, and I was looking at maybe pitching it to labels, I just sent him the songs and asked if he'd be interested. I know his record label is predominantly punk rock or hardcore, but he does have some singer-songwriters on there, and he was willing to put it out. So that was exciting, and that's kind of that's the reason why it was put out through him. And I'm just going to take the records and to North America and kind of do what I've always done, sort of the DIY distribution of playing shows.
Playing shows and selling records afterwards.
Yeah, it's...
You don't not want to get to the big record stores? Or,
well, I'd like to, but maybe I've always, when I'm in town, I'll go to the local record stores, at least in Canada, and you know, do a consignment there.
What about the recording process? Now on tour, you're just you and the guitar, but we heard some drums on the album. What?
Yeah, so that the album was recorded two different sessions in Portland, Oregon. My wife was studying naturopathic medicine in Portland. So for those few years in the wintertime, instead of focusing on touring, I just lived with her in that city, and started recording more acoustic stuff. But I made a few friends just in the music community, and they stepped in to you know, provide their talent to the songs, which are nice. This record is mostly stripped down, but you know, there's some pedal steel on there and some piano and a few songs with full band instrumentation, which I think is maybe nice for the listener, so it's not just, you know, the same sound throughout. Or at least that's the intention, to at least have a little bit of variety within this more stripped down folk country style.
What about your singing qualities, about the voice training, something like that?
You know what? Normally I don't have problems with the voice, but I think all the talking and even being in cigarette rooms, like that's kind of a different thing that we don't have back home. Usually I don't have any problems, but I think battling a little bit of a cold, I'm dealing with that. But back to the recording process, I recorded all the songs off the floor. So it was just, I think, like 4 or 5 microphones in a room, me sitting down like this, and wanted it to be as true to a live performance as possible. And and like there's definitely like the odd time where maybe the guitar playing or the vocals weren't, you know, perfect, but I think in this day and age where you can track things separately, you know, with Pro Tools, it loses the emotion and the charm of what recordings were like back in the day when it was all performance based. So that was something that because I really want the emotion of these songs to carry through. And the best way of doing that, I think, is by having it in one take.
No overdubs and no.
Yes. Well, we definitely like
put, no cheating.
You know, yeah. We tried to limit it as much as possible.
And you don't need, you don't use any effects or anything.
Yeah.
On stage, it's also.
Yeah, pretty bare bone for now. I definitely see myself exploring those avenues down the line, but for now, this is where my heart's at.
Do you tune the guitar sometimes in different?
Yeah, mostly just standard, and then drop D. I'll do that a lot. It just gives a little bit more bass tones, and it you approach, or at least I find I approach playing the guitar a little differently just by having the one string tuned down differently.
And on stage you used the harps.
Yeah. I started playing harmonica when I started that folk punk band that I was talking about, and it's nice to have it, I think, for leads, and I enjoy playing it. I sometimes will keep a harmonica in my pocket when I'm in a tractor or something and just keep myself amused.
And don't watch the grain. Well, could it be dangerous?
Oh,
on the tractor?
Sure, but you know, got one hand on the wheel.
And what about the farm now in winter time? Doesn't it need some care or?
We don't have any livestock, so right now the fields are covered in snow and the machinery's parked. So it's all good, but
no renovation work or something else.
Well, there is always work to be done and machinery to fix, but we cram that all into in the springtime. And you know, my dad is 62 years old, and he is very fit and active, and he loves it. Like I don't know if he'll ever want to retire. just because he's like, it's his identity. And if he didn't have the farm, I don't know if like his purpose in life would be drastically different.
So he's glad that he can take care of the business.
Totally. And it's like, it's a partnership. You know, it's never easy working with family. It presents its own challenges. There's no HR. You know, like the, you know, if there's disputes or whatever, where like in corporate settings where they step in to make sure, oh, you might have crossed the line there with your language. But I mean, it's, it doesn't get any better than, you know, we work some long days, but we don't have to commute in traffic or anything. You step outside, you're ready to go.
But if decisions had to be taken, so you do, it's on a... On a family, so who decides? Deciding together?
We decide together, and like we'll get together for coffee and have conversations and figure out what we're going to be doing for the season.
And what about Canada in general? The situation over there, especially in Alberta, but also the whole country. What's your view on?
Just like politically or...
Politically also, but also in general.
In general? Okay,
society.
Well, you know, one thing that I have noticed by traveling in Germany, you know, extensively over the past few years, is the willingness to talk about German history and the bad things that have happened. In Canada, we have a pretty violent history, particularly against our indigenous people. And there's been a lot of violence and pain due to colonialism. But we don't want to talk about it. We try to shy away from it. And I think if we were to take more of a stance like German population here and talk about it more openly, that way we can make sure that these things don't happen again. And that's the point.
Yes,
so I would say that right now we're a huge country geographically, but population-wise, we're really small and we're spread out. So we have different regional identities, much like here in Germany, and it's tough to keep people united. I wouldn't say there's like a huge amount of division, except like our relationship, or at least the Canadian government relationship, and even like there's racism against Indigenous people, and it's really sad because this is a population that has been significantly impacted by colonialism, and we're not talking about it.
But they're still fighting for their rights? Are they? Yeah, have a...
Mm-hmm.
Have a
well, there were supposed to be agreements, like treaties, where it allowed more independence for the different nations, the Indigenous nations in Canada. And those promises were never fulfilled from the get-go. So it's tricky. Like, it's a lot of bureaucratic red tape. And socially, there is the divide.
You have Indigenous... people in Alberta,
yeah. There's mainly like Plain Cree in northern Alberta, and there's Blackfoot Nation in southern Alberta, and a number of other ones that I'm just blanking on right now. But they were like traditionally. Mobile, so they would move with the seasons. Would
like you,
yeah. So they would, you know, lived off of the buffalo hunt and were nomadic and would migrate further south during the winter time for resources and warmer climate. But that's really tricky because when the treaties were signed. A lot of these nations were given just like a small plot of land, and it was like, here you go, this is your traditional land, but it really wasn't the proper sizes. And there's just a big disconnect, especially when you look at like going from a more barter, living off the land kind of lifestyle to having capitalism enforced on you. There's been a disconnect from the get-go, and we're still dealing with those repercussions.
Is there a possibility of exchange, or people like you are interested, or who are even in favor for their rights, that you are connected somehow, or is it isolated?
Like, yeah, you know, that's a really good question. There are opportunities, but I think it's just the willingness to create friendships. When my wife was working on a reserve in northern Alberta, she was doing more youth activity roles in the community, and she was living with an elder, and then that way she was able to forge friendships. And I think it's just that, yeah, I think like being willing to learn more about the customs and develop friendships and value the teachings that are available.
Being a role model.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, and we're at kind of like, I often think about being a white male, like a privileged person, like, and being a folk singer too, it's like you have a responsibility. And if you want to be like a good citizen, I think you got to be critical of what's around and willingness, or at least have a willingness to acknowledge your privilege, to realize, okay, what can I do? I have a responsibility here because not everybody's living in my shoes.
To reflect on that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think your voice can stand another song, or do you prefer to listen to the...
I could get away with one more, I
okay,
think.
Okay, great. Which one you have?
We're going to do Moving Day. This is a song about packing up all your stuff and moving from one house to the other and being reflective of who you were while you were living in this home.
And we walk through the half decade out of empty rooms into a new phase.
Joe Wickers live hier im Lokalmagazin und auch auf seinem neuen Album zu hören, Notes for the Wood Burning Stove. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. This has been really nice to be able to chat, and I hope everybody, you know, took some value from our discussion, and sorry for losing my voice. It's should have gone.
Take care of it. The tour is still going on, yeah? You have only one third of the whole tour.
That's right. I get on the ginger and lemon tea train and I'll be fine.
So thanks for being here one more time and take care and see you soon.
I hope to be back in the fall. So if any of you listeners out there like what you hear, all the songs are available on those media outlets, iTunes, Spotify, whatever, Napster too. Just... encourage everybody to go and check it out.
Natürlich auch als Vinyl und als CD. Das neue Album Notes for the Wood Burning Stove. Das war das Lokalmagazin live am Montagvormittag. Wiederholung nochmal am Dienstagmorgen zwischen 6 und 8. Und auch das volle Interview ist nachzuhören und runterzuladen auf wüste-welle.de. Das nächste Lokalmagazin dann am Freitag, dann zu Gast Laura und Amelie. Sie sind Teil des Orga-Teams der Week of Links. Wir sagen danke fürs Zuhören, macht's gut und bis zum nächsten Mal. Ciao, ciao, bye, bye.